Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week it's part two of our special exploration of the work of the UBSY think tank. Last week we looked at UBSY's founding objectives, heard how the team's put together, and examined how it explores some of the world's biggest problems. Today we're getting more detail on the themes UBSY is considering, amongst them the future of time and the future of leadership. We start with Robin Auer, who works in UBSY as a communications designer. Before we come on to time, a topic Robin's been exploring in particular detail, he shares a thought on why making sense of the future is so important.
What we do, or what we try to create visions and scenarios. That is the first thing, because that is what we can generate as a result for everything, because we can share it. We can put it on the paper, give the people to read. But what is the aim? Why we do that is we want to try to show the people a different world. We want to give them the possibility to see the world in a totally different angle. So because we think that we are in a situation where we can do that, especially in the banking situation, because we are not bankers. So as a communication designer, I have another perfect perspective on a banking system like UBS. And I believe, if we want to shape the world actively, we must think about how the world could be, and we need to look critically at the current state of things, and that is what we try to do here. So maybe some of the scenarios are unrealistic or absurd, but the people should try to join our thought process and ask themselves, so what if the world really could be like this? What will happen then?
More from Robin Auer in a moment. Let's talk now about two key areas of research practice in UBSY. The future of time, as we've mentioned, is on the way, but first, the future of leadership. Konstantin Meyer is a societal researcher in the think tank. His background is economics and communication and cultural management. He focuses on the future of corporate culture and leadership as an enabler of that. So, first, how would Konstantin define leadership?
In scientific papers, there's a myriad of these definitions, but academia did not really compound for one of these definitions, and they go through kind of even an evolution depending on the research trends from year to year or from decade to decade in the past. And in academic circles of the US, for example, this term is defined as a process of social influence in which a person can enlist support or aid of others to accomplish common tasks. But aside from definitions, I think leadership can also be viewed from two different perspectives. So leadership could be viewed as a status, talking about hierarchy and formal authority. So basically the position that you hold in a company and the authority that comes along with that. Or the other perspective would be looking at leadership as a process where a leader-follower exchange happens and where kind of an informal authority happens. And this, when you look at leadership as a process, it is a very relationship-based approach towards that concept. Well, recently there was popping up the term of relational leadership, which can be seen as a social influence process through which, emerging coordination and change are constructed and produced.
The rise of technology has prompted many to speculate about the notion of algorithms as the potential leaders of the future. It's a compelling idea, agrees Konstantin Meyer, but he cautions that we forget the right brain stuff at our peril. Given that, what about the principle of artificial intelligence or machine leaders in the future?
Well, that sounds pretty tempting, right? I think because there would be an inevitable logic underlying then the concept of decision taking, and emotional factors would be faded out. Also, of course, AI could make use of knowledge from historical events and use forecasting to properly and 100% correctly decide on things. But this would only be good for leadership as a status when strategic decisions must be taken. And we think that it is a bit of a different story when leadership is seen as a social process where humans follow the beliefs and actions of other humans. And in this case, we think that, we think that leadership strongly deals with the human factor of a firm and therefore kind of human traits or human qualities are also required, such as, well, creativity or emotions, humor, intuition, imagination, all that, let's say, right brain stuff, right? And the choices and interactions, which are unique human aspects of an organization, they can and should not be easily expressed in binary code, at least today, right? As culture is a human thing, and this is why there might be some further developments needed until we can actually talk about algorithms leading companies when there's still people part of the company.
To get a broader perspective on the future of leadership and how future leaders innovate, we sought the view too of Linda Hill, leadership expert and faculty chair at the Harvard Business School. In her work, Collective Genius, she explains how great leaders set the stage for innovation and can innovate more than once.
One of the leaders we studied, an exceptional leader at Google, told us, you know, by definition, if you're trying to do something innovative, you don't really have a vision. You don't necessarily, you don't have an answer or where you're even how to get there. And so what he focused on is how do I create an organization that's both willing and able to do what is the really emotionally and intellectually taxing work of innovation? Because innovation is hard work, as all of those of us who have been engaged in it know. One of the leaders that we had the good fortune of studying was the founder of Pixar. And when people think about those movies, I'm sure many of you have seen, if not all of us have seen Pixar movies, that's not about solo genius, it's about collective genius. It takes 250 people approximately 5 years to make one of those movies. And so what the leaders focus on is how do I set the stage, not so much be the performer, so that all of the talent, all the passionate people we have there can actually contribute what they refer to as their particular slice of genius to the making of an exceptional movie. So one of the things the leaders do, you do need to create, if you will, for people a sense of where they're going. But the focus is not on so much, you know, where are we going? It's actually more a focus on who we are and what we're doing and having a very bold ambition of the problem we're trying to solve or the opportunity we're trying to address. And that does pull people together. You do need to get people aligned. And the way they do that is by really creating a community of practice focused on getting that bold ambition done. And so when we're aligned that way, that does allow us to move, and certain things are acceptable and certain things aren't. And so as you know, in these organizations, what we saw is they had very strong cultures and very what we referred to as rules of engagement about how you were supposed to interact and how you were supposed to think about problems. And again, that kept all the people aligned doing, if you will, the right thing.
Linda Hill. Back to Constantin Meyer now to pick up on this theme of the future of leadership, of innovation, and the influence of technological advancement. So, how will leaders be spending their time in future?
There are pretty time-consuming tasks ahead for leaders, and that leaders, given the fact of these reinforcers and the development of the megatrends, would have to lead beyond authority, and they would have to lead through relationships, and they would have to cross boundaries of all kinds, be it functional, geographical, organizational, even sectoral or cultural. And they would have a lot more stakeholders to cater to. And the transaction they do on a global scale will be with a very, very diverse variety of people and organizations. And the strategic goals they set, they probably also will have to be a lot more holistic. And yeah, this is why the challenges we think that might wait for future leaders would be speaking more cultural and social languages, having more people and organizations to balance, being, well, in more and maybe even multiple places at the same time. Well, it seems that's possible, but I would like to go to a concept that we developed that could kind of make that happen, but two more challenges. So decisions that must be taken would be more complex and, well, the environment where leaders move in would be more volatile.
Looking ahead then to the future CEO, for example, in 2030, what are their main challenges going to look like and how might artificial intelligence play a role?
We thought, why would the future leader or future CEO in 2030, a person that has such high responsibility and such high impact and influence, we think maybe one single person cannot handle these responsibilities or challenges by himself or herself anymore. We ask ourselves, of course, why wouldn't it be possible that a future leader would be digitally and socially constructed? Well, how would that work? We could imagine, actually, that a group of people, instead of one person, becomes a future leader, and that this group of people could be supported by AI. And this is where we get back to the challenge that we were talking about before. So we definitely need a human sector in leadership to make sure to inspire and to motivate people. But maybe AI could complement these human traits and this human sector with, as I said before, an inevitable logic and very, very rational decision-making based on historical events and maybe even future forecasting.
Konstantin Meyer. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at another critical theme in UBSY's current thinking, the future of time. We heard at the top of the show from Robin Auer, UBSY communications designer, who's been looking at the future of time. And there's more from him now. So, why is our time important and how do we commoditize it?
Benjamin Franklin said time is money. And we asked ourselves, is he right with that quote? Of course, time is not money, we know that. But still, if we get enough money, we could do nearly everything. So we sell our time. Time is much more than money. Time is our most precious resource. We can somehow earn money again if we lose it. But the story is dramatically different when it comes to time. Time once gone is lost forever. So there's a great quote from Rolf Potts. He said, time is the truest form of wealth, and the beauty is we are all born equal rich on time. I would say time is our most important resource because it's limited, and that's, I think, the answer.
How do we invest our time in the future? Well, Robin Auer and his colleagues spend a lot of time considering different scenarios, and many of these what-ifs focus on the work-life balance.
Meanwhile, think tank believes that time will be more and more compressed over the coming years. So technology will give us the possibility to save and manage our time. So every innovation, what will come, needs to be a time saver. But what can we do with our time? That's then the next question, because when we try to save time all the time, and if we try to compress them all the time, we have to decide what can we do with the time we have. And in one of our internal publications in UBSY, it was about the future of work, we said that work will be one point where we will invest a lot of our time when we have more. It's a little bit weird, but it's true, because our work-life balance will shift considerably. So we believe that work will not be a burden or a drudgery anymore. It will be fun and we will enjoy it. So that's also something what you can see with artists, for example, today. So the boundaries between our work and life will be removed. And the second thing will be family, friends, and other social contacts will be more and more important and will still be part of our whole lives. So work, friends, social contacts, that will be the focus. We will have a clear shift to more qualitative time instead of quantitative time, even though we will still measure the time with the clock.
Themes around work-life balance and how we spend our time are bound up in our approach and attitude towards it. David Gellis from the New York Times has written a book on the parallel theme of mindfulness, which speaks to the way businesses can engage with some simple principles in order to help manage these dynamics most profitably and constructively in the future. Here's David.
Mindfulness is the simple act of paying attention in the present moment on purpose, in a particular way, and non-judgmentally. And I know that sounds like a lot. It's a lot to unpack. But if you strip it down, it really just means being right here, right now, instead of getting caught up in thoughts of the future or dwelling on thoughts about the past. This tension between profit motive and essentially the call for more peace and equanimity, those two things on the face of it seem so incompatible, and yet companies are trying to straddle that line. So as for what companies want to get out of it, I think oftentimes they actually do sincerely want less stressed, more focused employees. And if you think about it, if employees are less stressed and more focused, they might actually do a better job doing their work, and the company might make more money. I don't think they're doing it to try to make more productive automatons who are just sitting there cranking out their work that much faster. But I think companies are starting to realize, and the research is backing it up, that if your employees are a bit more peaceful, taking a bit better care of themselves, a bit kinder to one another perhaps, the whole operation is going to work better.
David Gellis there. Back to Robin Auer, though, now. Robin expands next on the optimization process, talking about the compression of time, establishing how and why we value time more than money. He explains this is a qualitative question. What does he mean exactly?
So we have 24 hours. And as I said, the quote from Rolf Potts, we are all equal born, rich on time. We have every day 24 hours. And after 24 hours, we have again 24. So that's what we say is we are equal rich. What we try to do at the moment is we try to compress it. We want to put more and more stuff into time. Technology will help us to manage that. And then we will have more leisure time. That's the thing what we think. And then it's a question, what can we do with that additional leisure time? Mm-hmm. And we think we will put it more in the qualitative. And everything what is qualitative, we think at the moment it's friends and social contacts.
And that's Robin Auer with some compelling future scenarios that have been the focus of the UBSY think tank. And that brings us to the end of this 97th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. You can hear both special episodes focusing on the work of UBSY and all other past editions at monocle.com or via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.